Back into another edition of the Dapped on Draft podcast. Today we are diving into a mailbag. Yesterday we hit a dafter draft. You know, we're getting back into the swing of things here again, dropping to 3 days a week. And Dalton and I are both going to be getting back into some tape, so we'll get 2026 focused here in a heartbeat. But wrapping up 2025, about a month into this. But Dalton, are you ready for this mailbag?
I am ready for this mailbag, and we have a couple of quarterback questions, and I've actually been cutting up a bunch of quarterbacks for the top tier Patreons. So I have seen quite a bit of guys who you wouldn't probably have seen, or most of you probably wouldn't have seen a lot of. So I will have some words on them in this for sure, because they are a lot of freaking fun, the guys that I have cut up so far. So we'll have some positives, we'll have some negatives to talk about, but I am very excited for this. And honestly, I'm very excited to get into the 2026 class. I needed that mental break for a while after the 2025 class, and I am ready to get back into it. Once I have a little bit of time to actually sit down and watch guys instead of just cutting them up. And I think, you know, part of what I'll be doing is watching while I cut these guys up, and that'll probably be just the way that I do it. And I'm going to watch guys that most people probably have never even heard of at this point, but that's I watch who I get requested, and that's about all there is to it.
I love it. Again, quarterbacks are pretty much the only things I've watched, and plus the guys, like, you always have a few carryovers from 2025 of guys you didn't declare. So
yeah, and you see guys out of the corner of your eye quite a bit, you know, especially some of the top guys. So There's enough to at least talk about.
For sure. But I've written up a handful of the quarterbacks. I've gotten a corner from the, I guess, Big 12 now. It was a Pac-12 corner. I found a nice little G5 guard who's playing tackle from Memphis, who's actually pretty decent too. Like, I'd probably throw a top 150, top 175 grade on him. So pretty decent player there too that I've written up. But yeah, let's dive right in here. So let's start with these quarterback questions here, Dalton. Let's knock them out. Starting with Arizona Jace on Twitter, AZ Jace on Twitter. Which draft eligible QB are you most intrigued to watch this upcoming season? One each, if not the same guy for both of you. I'll let you start because my answer is obviously really, really obvious. So I'll let you start with this question.
Yeah, I'm not going that direction because I'm not going with one of the top guys.
Okay. I won't either because I've got a guy I'll talk about too then.
Yeah, because, like, obviously we're excited about Fernando Mendez. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I personally am super excited for Lenoris Sellers. Like, those are the top two guys that I'm really looking forward to in this class. But I don't want to talk about those guys right now because there's other people talking about them. I want to see what John Mateer does at Oklahoma. Because that dude is a heart attack on a bun. And I'm going to have a heart attack on a bun tomorrow because I'm going to have a 2.2-pound burger and a bunch of fries and a 6,000-calorie meal. That's this heart attack. He is unbelievable to watch because the passing attack at Washington State was an abomination for the most part. But There is a ton of really cool quarterback design runs, and I don't know particularly like how fast he is, but my God, is he shifty. My God, does he have good vision, and he can make guys miss in a phone booth. He takes really good angles as a runner as well. He does his best to avoid big hits. If he takes some steps as a passer, and I don't know what that's going to look like at Oklahoma just because things are so different now that Lincoln Riley is gone there. I'm very excited to see what we get from Mateer at OU.
Yeah, it's the same offensive system. He's there because his offensive coordinator took the job at OU. So, yeah, so a nice little nice continuity there for him to at least not have to learn a whole new playbook from transferring over from Washington State to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I just hope there's more true drop back stuff, and he does a little bit better job in those situations.
Him and talked about it a little bit.
Believe I think
it was last episode. Him and Sam Levitt are in that same team for me, where these guys have like wildly live arms, like wildly whippy arms, but they are paranoid back there.
Yeah.
One isn't there. When one's not there, they are freaking out.
Somebody who isn't paranoid back there that I want to bring up, just because he was QB1 heading into the year last year for us, is Connor Wegman. Because there is no paranoia in the pocket for him. He stands in there and he delivers, and he gets hurt every single time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it'll be another interesting name to watch for quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. Again, with Wegman now, I'm just like full on pause button.
Let's
wait.
Well, we're full on pause button for a lot of these quarterbacks in this class.
For sure. I could go a couple different directions here. Like, there's a part of me that wants to say, like, I want to go all the way to Sacramento State and finally see Jaden Rashada on the field with Brennan Marion and the go-go offense. And, like, that's a fun college quarterback story. But, like, I'm not talking about Jaden Rashada at all as a prospect until we actually see him on the field as a player outside of whatever he tried to do at Arizona State. There's two that I want to go with here. I've harped on Aiden Chiles a lot at Michigan State. I've harped on what I thought he did actually really, really well at Michigan State, despite what the box score says, despite the 11 interceptions. I trust Jonathan Smith. Jonathan Smith recruited him at Oregon State as well. I have to keep harping that Michigan State was literally burned down to the studs by Mel Tucker on his way out of that program. So this is year two now with Jonathan Smith. They kept Nick Marsh, who's an awesome wide receiver there at Michigan State as well, kept him out of the portal somehow. And so I think there's a lot to look forward to in year two with Aiden Chiles at Michigan State. You even go back and watch, like, he started a couple games for DJ Uiagalelei at Oregon State as a true freshman, as a 17-year-old. And there's a lot to like there. I thought he had to play some hero ball last year, not excusing the 11 interceptions, all of them. I think there is a bozo gene there that probably needs to be worked out. But Aiden Chiles is one that I'm definitely like pegging as my my breakout candidate quarterback this year. It's Aiden Chiles. Second one is Dante Moore, who we also talked about a little bit last week, who did start as a true freshman at UCLA with Chip Kelly. Didn't necessarily go as well as maybe he thought it would as a true freshman starting at UCLA. Chip Kelly gets fired. He transfers to Oregon, takes a beat, which I think is a great call. Take a beat, back up for a year, backs up Dylan Gabriel last year, a great quarterback to learn from, a great quarterback to sit behind. And now he's taking the starting reins again as a starting quarterback for the Oregon Ducks. And so I want to see kind of what that offseason did for him. Again, another highly recruited player. What that offseason did for him and his development now that he's coming back out and he's starting again. Technically a second year starter, but kind of for all intents and purposes of a first year starter at Oregon there. So those are the two that I'm pinning as my guys I want to watch.
I have one more name for NFL draft prospect, and it's Joey Aguilar. Aguilar going to Tennessee. That'll be interesting because I liked a little bit of what I saw from him. And then just from a college quarterback perspective, obviously Diego Pavia and Kevin Jennings at SMU. Those are the two guys for me.
Pavia is
just
like
watch them.
College football's villain. College football means the villain.
He's so awesome.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. He's awesome. I'm sure he made a ton of NIL money after that Alabama game and the media tour he went on after that. He deserves it. All right. But yeah, that's a great start to this mailbag. Let's move on to question two here.
Is the 2026 QB class being overhyped at this point? I think it's tough to, I think it's tough to overhype it or underhype it because when I look at this class, like I don't see anybody talking about any of these guys as like a Trevor Lawrence type product, like, that there's going to be five first rounders. You know what I mean? So, we talked about it on Dafter Draft. Like, we think there's probably going to be three tops, maybe four. And that's like kind of squinting. But I think where it's not being overhyped is, and we just kind of went over it, the amount of names who are really interesting athletes at the college position to where, like, if you squint, you could see a really fun NFL player, even if the overall like ceiling as a passer is a little bit lower. Even if the frame is a little bit small, like there is very intriguing sides of a lot of these college passers at this point. And so that's where I don't think it's being overhyped. And then the other question here is the QBs that might be being slept on. And we kind of just talked about a bunch of guys who are day two, day three types. So we don't really have to go over that. But did you think it's being overhyped in any ways? Because I haven't heard like too much about it.
No, I think naturally people want to be excited about it because of the quarterback class we just came out of. You know, I think there's a natural,
and because there's so many QB needy teams still.
Yeah. And I think it just depends, like it depends who you are insulating yourself with in conversation, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the people that I've talked to or the people that I follow have done a really good job of understanding the context of the quarterback class. And I think, you know, if you like, the episode I did with Nate is so good because I think we did a decent, like, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think we did a really good job of insulating the quarterback class as well. Of like, these are the guys that we think could rise. These are the guys that are not first year starters that we expect to take some sort of leap. These are the guys that probably are going to go back to school because it's the NIL era and there's no reason to leave $4 million behind if you don't have to. Like,
yep.
And so I think if you look at it through that lens and you can kind of tear it out like that, I don't think there's really any need to overhype it. Maybe Lenora Sellers is maybe gathering a bit more, but like, he's awesome. Like his tools are awesome. So like, but he, at the end of the game, like he's the one that's hard to like kind of insulate because one, he is only 20. So like he could fit in that tier of like, there's no need to overhype him yet because there's no reason to leave NIL money on the table unless you have to. But at the same time, he legitimately has A+ tools. And so it's hard not to like jump the shark a little bit with him. So he's the one, if we are talking about overhyping a quarterback class, he's the one that is hard not to jump the shark on a little bit, but also like hard to find a box to put him in, a tier to put him in, so to speak. I don't think we're overhyping it. I think we have a healthy amount of anticipation based on the quarterback class we're coming out of and based on the wild tools that these guys have and the jump that we can anticipate them having. I think it's appropriately anticipated.
Who is the highest graded prospect each of you have ever had? For me, it was before I had a numerical grading scale, so it's kind of tough. Like, because my numerical grading scale was only a couple of years old. But I would say it would probably have ended up being Joe Burrow. That season he had, the year that he had, everything that he did as a quarterback is everything that I love in quarterback play. And even though like the ability to create outside of structure is important on my grading scale as well, he did that too. He just did it differently than guys like Caleb Williams do. And you're seeing that at the NFL level now. Like it's an elevated version, and this is going to sound insane, but like it's an elevated version of what Tom Brady does. Or did, where it's subtle movements in the pocket and he's able to deliver with a collapsing pocket, but instead of, you know, doing it standing straight up and just doing little micro movements, it's like him literally falling to the ground and making these plays like he did last year. Like for me, he always had that little bit of like Tony Romo athleticism to him with the headiness of Tom Brady in the pocket. And so for me, like he was just a complete quarterback prospect by the time he was leaving LSU. Yeah. And if it's not him, it's Travis Hunter.
Yeah. Boy. So yeah, again, I've only been like scouting since like 2019, 2020. Like end of 2019 is when I really got into it with that. Cause I was in grad school too. I graduated grad school May of 2018. And that's when I got bored and was like, hell yeah, let's start doing this. So for me, 2020 is the first year where I started like actually grading people. And honestly, I was a Herbert guy that year as well. So like, I don't think a quarterback would fall in that category. If we're going quarterbacks, it's probably Trevor Lawrence. But actually, highest overall grade is probably Jalen Carter. Obviously, Jalen Carter got drafted 9th overall. For some other reasons other than football as well that happened leading up to the year he was drafted. Jalen Carter was just so dominant, man. Was just so dominant. And it's kind of lived up. It's kind of lived up to the hype at the NFL level, already an all-pro in year two. So I would say Jalen Carter is my highest graded player. Travis Hunter's up there, though. Travis Hunter's up there.
Yeah, Travis Hunter was absolutely fantastic. I have another one that we didn't discuss pre, but we're going to now because I missed it, unfortunately. This one's from Clay Fink, Clay_Fink. By the way, the last one was from Benjamin Hodge. Benjamin Hodge on X. Who is your biggest my guy on the offensive line since you started doing this? Even if it didn't work out.
Dang. That's a great question.
It really, truly is.
I actually have mine. I've got mine. So for me, mine is Olufashinu.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I mean, it's worked out. He went first round and there's a really good reason for this. I was doing some consulting, and that would have been, geez, the summer of 2022, because he came out in 2024, summer of 2022. And this dude literally had only started the bowl game against Arkansas that year, because Rashid Walker was the starting left tackle for Penn State at the time, drafted in the seventh round by the Packers. Rashid Walker was hurt that bowl game, didn't play. Literally Olufashinu's only game that he had played started up to that point. And I watched that game and I said, this guy's a freaking first rounder. This guy's a first rounder. Unfortunately, the agent I told it to didn't buy into it. It is what it is. But I was like, this guy's a first rounder. And then he went in, started as he was, 19 that year he started. Then his redshirt sophomore season, started at Penn State and was really dominant. And I got to sit down and I interviewed him because I was really early on him. I interviewed Olufashinu. He was awesome. He was awesome. Olufashinu was awesome to talk to. I ended up going back to school again, back to Penn State, and then declared as a 21 year old. He played at the age of 20 his redshirt sophomore or redshirt junior season. Ended up declaring, then went first round of the Jets. And so Olufashinu will forever be like my guy on the offensive line, just because like I can say that I was there very early. I built a relationship with him. I interviewed him. I still sometimes will shoot him a message every once in a while. Drafted in the first round, started as a rookie, played well, and now is heading into year two with the Jets. So Olufashinu is going to be my guy, my answer there.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Mine is Graham Barden. Mine is Graham Barden. I just, watching him play, I said, this dude is going to be a freaky, freaky good center. He was a top five player for me in that class, or top 10 player for me in that class. He was the number one offensive lineman for me in that class as a center. He graded high at tackle, guard, and center for me. And I would say the next guy that I would really like to bring up in this conversation is Christian Darrisaw. Loved Christian Darrisaw in that class, man. I never really saw it with Alex Leatherwood. Penny nope. School, we should have all seen it with. The people who didn't, I thought was funny. But man, I loved Christian Darrisaw's game. And so that was probably one of the bigger spikes for me.
Yeah, Christian Darrisaw has a rep that
I also really loved Thayer Munford. And Thayer Munford has just like been okay, but okay is good. Okay is good.
Spencer Brown was one of my guys from that class. Ended up getting drafted in the third round by the Bills, and he's become one of the best right tackles in football since then as well. I do remember being a Spencer Brown guy.
Work out for you.
Ooh.
For me, it's Lucas Niang.
Ooh. Well, he had that hip injury he never recovered from.
Yeah, but still.
For me, I was pretty into, do you remember Tommy Doyle out of Miami of Ohio?
Yeah.
2021.
Yep.
I really liked Tommy Doyle. Like I thought like they had a game against Iowa where I thought he played AJ Epenesa really, really well in that game. Like I think he ended up getting by the Bills as well, drafted in the fifth round. And I think he had an injury settlement. He got cut like an injury release this past season from the Bills. So Tommy Doyle is probably one. I guess Tevin Jenkins probably fits in that category a little bit. Although he's like started games, it hasn't.
He's been all right at guard.
Yeah, I was. I really like Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State as well.
I liked him too
that year. But Christian Darrisaw has a rep from that from his. I think it was summer scouting, so it would have been like he was drafted in 2021, right? 2021. Yeah. So it would have been his 2019 tape then. We're on a screen. This dude gets out, levels a guy in space, and then runs like 30 yards down the field with the receiver in space. And it's just a rep that I don't think I've seen an offensive lineman do since. Christian Darrisaw did that on that tape. Like, he is out in front of his like lead blocking 30, 40 yards down the field. And like just a true testament to his athleticism in space and his feel in space. But I don't know if I've seen it since.
So I'm glad we got that. I'm glad I saw that question because that was a fun one.
That was a fun one. All right. Which one is next here? Are we on to the, I think we're on to the Discord questions now, right?
We are.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm pulling some of these questions now from my Discord channel. Again, if you would like access to this Discord channel, it is for paid subscribers to the Daft on Draft channel. And then you can drop some.
I saw the Jinx man himself is part of the Discord now too.
Yes.
I saw Brett joined.
Yes, he did. Brett Coleman is a member of the Discord channel now. Yes. I really like this question. It's from Tyler Fornes, who works for A to Z Sports, a good friend in the industry, Tyler Fornes. When it comes to scouting quarterbacks, how do you handle RPOs in terms of progressions, decision-making, and what can and can't you learn? Can I go first on this one? Do you mind if I go first on this
Absolutely
one?
Absolutely, go.
So I'm to the point now where like the only thing that I pay attention to about a college quarterback's college playbook is the amount of time that this player might need to warm up to the NFL level. That's it. I personally, all I want to see a college quarterback do is, are you answering the questions the test you're given? Whether that's RPO laden, whether that's not, are you answering the questions the test that you're given? Like Desmond Ridder came from a pro-style system and people hyped that to hell. And that, it was 2022, it was a really bad quarterback class too. People hyped that to hell. That, well, Desmond Ridder's coming from a pro system. I don't care. Drake May at North Carolina is coming from a super RPO offense where you could tell his coaching isn't the best. You could tell like the playbook is razor thin. He's consistently answering the questions and he's got A+ tools. So in terms of RPOs, how do I handle that in terms of progressions, decision making? Are they making good decisions in an offense no matter how thin or how thick it is? Like, that's what it comes down to. Can you see how the quarterback got to the answer that he got to? Like Nate and I talked about with Fernando Mendoza, is the Cal offense really that dense? No, it's a lot of RPOs. It's a lot of three-man concepts. It's a lot of offenses, like a lot of concepts where they don't give him a check. They don't give him a hot to get the ball to. So it makes life a little bit harder on him. But can you see consistently where he's making, why he's getting to the answer that he's getting to, and how does his timer look in that kind of offense? So like, I don't care what kind of college offense quarterbacks are coming from these days. Are they just being smart with the football in the offense? Can I see how they're getting to the answer they're getting to in the offense that they're given to play in? And that's a big thing with Jackson Dart. I didn't hate Jackson Dart because he's coming from an RPO spread, whatever you want to call Lane Kiffin's offense. I wasn't a fan of Jackson Dart because I felt like he was routinely slow in an offense where like I felt like answers were being given to him.
And that's where the context lies, where RPOs, the answer is given to you. It is quite simple. And for me, I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction, although I very much agree with everything that you say. And that's like what we've consistently talked about with like a Tennessee with Joe Milton versus Malik Hooker. Like Malik Hooker answered the questions to the test that he was given. It's not his fault that he was given the answers to the test. Right. Joe Milton was not answering those same questions. And there's a reason why, even though he had the far superior physical tools, he was never able to unseat Malik Hooker as the starter there in Tennessee. So when I look at RPOs, they are answers that are given to you on the test. They are answers that every single high school quarterback should be able to answer with ease. And so you need to be able to get the ball out quickly. You need to be able to get the ball out on time. And at the NFL level, where RPOs are still used, you need to get the ball out even quicker because those linemen cannot go 3 to 5 yards to 6 yards to 7 yards. Because nobody ever calls illegal downfield in college football. But what I think it all kind of comes down to is when it comes to RPOs and decision making, you're right. It's about answering the questions that you are given. And I think on top of that, how you execute that, and not only how you execute that, but how you are able to build off of that and show what you're able to do elsewhere. So like with RPOs specifically, what kind of arm angles are we getting from you? Because you are going to have to be a little bit tricky at times to find a throwing window, to find that window to actually deliver the football in those situations. So there are things that you can learn from them, but like from a progression standpoint, there's really nothing that you can learn from an RPO because there is no actual progression there. It's a one-man read.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Either the linebacker crashes on the running back or he sits on the slant most of the time.
Yeah, and maybe it's not the linebacker. Maybe you're reading the apex. Right. Sometimes you're going to be reading the corner in that situation as well. Sometimes you're even reading backside. But, I mean, it doesn't matter who you're really looking at. You have to be able to see it. It kind of is what it is. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good question though. All right. Two more here. Who are some prospects that you had developed an irrational love for, despite knowing they probably won't succeed in the NFL?
Shout out Mark Schofield. It's Brett Rypien.
Oh, Brett Rypien.
I love Brett Rypien so much.
Mm-hmm.
So much. So much.
I got to think about this one, man. I got to think about this one because like, oh no, I know who it is. I know who it is big time. Trey Tomlinson out of TCU, corner Trey Tomlinson. That dude was like 5'7", but that dude was scrappy as hell, would fire off downfield, like trigger and get downhill so fast. And like he was legitimately twitched up. So like I loved Trey Tomlinson. NFL bloodlines as well. And so I was like, you know, this guy's, I don't care. He's an outlier. I'm going to bet on this outlier. He already got cut by the Rams. He was like a day 3 pick and already got cut. just because like he's 5'7". Come on now.
Yeah.
So like Trey Tomlinson was that guy for me. Like everything about his tape was like, this guy can play. And yeah. Just didn't make it.
One more for me, Marcel Aitman. I love Marcel Aitman, man. I thought he was the best receiver on that team. I might not have actually been wrong about that, but no NFL success for Marcel.
Yeah. I'm sure I could think of like some really shifty 5'5" wide receivers or running backs who were like really awesome in college that just like never stood a chance at the NFL
level. Speaking of, we can talk about one of those kind of guys with the next question.
Which 2026 prospect?
But we're doing 2025, remember.
Oh, yeah. Which 2025 prospect is the sumo deadlift of the class? Thank you, JP Acosta, for this question. Is the sumo deadlift of this class, in parentheses, shouldn't be discussed and is actually evil?
Listen, if you're a power lifter, it absolutely should be discussed, especially because your leverages are probably going to be anatomically better for the sumo deadlift than the conventional deadlift to be able to lift more weight, which is the entire point of powerlifting. But I understand the sumo hate. I immediately wanted to say RJ Harvey for this. But I will say the saving grace is that he went to like the perfect mm-hmm. spot. To where I can maybe envision some success for him as a running back. And that's in Denver with Sean Payton, who has shown that he can use very, very niche players in very, very creative ways.
Yeah.
Corey?
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with James Pierce. It feels kind of cop-outy. But 26th overall to give a future first round to get him doesn't really have a power profile in his game. And if you look at the way that the past two rookie of the years have been winning at the NFL level, it's with long arm, it's with speed to power, and Will Anderson and Jared Verse. And some other coachability things that have been out there about James Pierce as well. I know that people had this guy as like their top player on their board coming into the season, like a top five player on their board coming into the season.
We both had him high.
We both had him high as well. I think I finished with him in my top 15. How much are you going to win with flexibility? Like, he very much feels like the Atlanta Falcons pass rusher that they try to draft every year that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I think you're drafting an early season DPR. I don't know what he gives you in the run game. I mean, you're hoping that he has, you're hoping he's Hassan Reddick, right? You're hoping he's Hassan Reddick, who, despite the lack of a power profile, figures it out and gives you double digit sacks.
Yeah.
That's pretty steep to give up a future first for.
Yeah. I've two more for different reasons.
Okay.
One is Isaac Tesla. Just because I don't know what he brings, like, as a wide receiver, like as a pass catcher for that offense. As a blocker, I understand it. As a Dan Campbell kind of guy, I understand it. And then the other guy that we're not going to talk about, but for a different reason, is because we just like don't have to. He's going to be freaking awesome. And it's evil that he went as late as he did, is Xavier Watts.
Another Falcon.
Pairing him with Jesse Bates.
Yeah.
Is a disgusting, disgusting coverage duo on the back end at safety for them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good way to close it out. All right. With so we answered. Yeah, we answered quite a few questions there. That was a good episode. I loved all the quarterback talk. I loved what we got into there. So that's going to do it this week for the Daft on Draft podcast. We'll be back for three episodes again next week. Dalton's doing things. I'm doing things. Follow along. I'm streaming again. Well, I will have streamed last night by the time you're listening to this episode. I'm going to stream it once this weekend as well. It's good to get one weekend stream in when people don't have to go to work the next day as well. So we'll get one more in. Vanderbilt's rolling. I accidentally recruited David Duke to play strong safety for me for Vanderbilt. So I'm going to have to change his name. But yes, I legitimately recruited David Duke. There's a guy named David Duke, an AI-generated player. So, and he's from Louisiana as well. So I that feels not unintentional by
some sort of developer
at EA. But that did happen. So we'll change his name, though. I'll talk about it on the stream. But that's it. Thank you guys for following along. Until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.